our bodies are keyed up and they're amped up all the time, and they're not given their natural recovery cycles. So we're just not able to recover the way that we need to recover. And that keyed up, amped up lifestyle just starts to feel so normal. And so why it's so important to get into these routines of having silence and solitude and rhythm and slowness in our life is that it teaches our bodies how to relax and how to come down out of their state of arousal and just rest.
Okay, so here we are with Dr. Charity Byers. She is a clinical therapist and psychologist. She runs an incredible organization down in Florida called The Blessing Ranch, and I'll let her explain a little bit more about what that is. But first and foremost, Dr. Charity, thank you so much for giving us some of your time. And, you know, without even sharing your wisdom, I know we're going to get a lot. So thanks so much for being here.
You're very welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Great. So, Dr. Charity, I'm familiar with your work and a little bit of what you do down in Florida and how formative it is for people. But for those that aren't familiar with the Blessing Ranch, how about you share with us what it is that you do and how you even got into it a little bit? And then on the back end, even, this isn't just like a medical facility that you run. There is a huge spiritual component to what you do. So I know that's a big request, but why don't you just tee us off with how God uses you, what you do, how you help people, and how God is at work in this hugely medical and spiritual place.
Yeah, absolutely. So Blessing Ranch, the ministry that I work for, is very personal because it was founded by my mom and dad about 25, 30 years ago.
Nice.
So, you know, it kind of runs in my blood, you might say. But anyhow, my quick background of my dad is that he was in church ministry for several years, mostly before I was born. And then he became a psychologist and worked in the secular world of psychology for a number of years. Kind of had in the back of his mind this idea that somehow the worlds of psychology and theology needed to come together, but he didn't have the formula for how to do that. So that's where God stepped in, and he kind of gave him this very clear vision for creating a resource and renewal center for Christian leaders. And that's what Blessing Ranch is today. And it's all built upon this really important relationship between psychology and theology, where we say, you know, theology really is the truth, and psychology just becomes the meaningful application of the truth.
Wow.
So that's the heart of the work that we do. Our primary mode of taking care of Christian leaders is through intensive counseling, and we run a five-day program where we have people with us who come from, you know, out of state usually, and get to be away from home and have that change of pace and that change of place that can lead to change of perspective, right?
That's so good.
And so that's kind of the heart of what we do, and just the desire that we have for everybody's life is to live well, lead well, and finish well. So, you know, as I said at the beginning, I'm part of the family, so have kind of grown up with this ministry. But I really had no idea growing up that this would be my future. I was kind of the shy kid behind the scenes, so just never would have imagined following in my dad's footsteps. But as God does, you know, he takes us in places we would never have expected. And
that's
so
the truth.
After a lot of reformation of my own identity and finding my own voice and all of those important things that God had to do to prepare my heart, I found myself back joining my dad as a psychologist on staff about 10 years ago. So it's been a privilege and a whole lot of fun as well to just come alongside my family and now do this in a professional sense.
That's awesome. And so when you say the majority of your clients are coming from out of state, to me, that rings of a certain severity. That there is an urgency and a weight to the type of counseling you do, not to diminish what therapists do elsewhere. You know, like when I went to therapy for like 8 months in 2018 or so to deal with some real deep-seated wounds of people-pleasing and performing for people, I was able to do that in-state. But if you have such a large client base coming from out of state, the judgment I make is that we're talking about like some very weighty things. So, you know, can you share a little bit about that, of the significance or the weight of what you have to navigate almost on a weekly basis, just to help people understand like the significance of what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. There really are people who come through our doors on every end of the spectrum, from crisis to wellness. And we actually like it that way. Okay. You know, it's very true what you say, that a lot of people do come to Blessing Ranch because something is going on that's really difficult. A crisis has happened. A marriage has blown up. A secret's been revealed. A ministry has imploded. Burnout has happened. So we see people, you know, with all kinds of things that would fit into that crisis category. But we also really believe in the other side of care, which is just the more preventative side of care, or the growth side of care, where we're taking the next step up, we're navigating a transition. And a beautiful thing that we've actually seen happen, especially over the last maybe 5-10 years, is an increasing number of people who are coming through here just on sabbatical, where they're making this a regular part of their routine to slow down, reflect, grow, heal, and prepare for the next season. So we do have folks come through on all ends of that spectrum, from crisis to wellness, and I think it's a beautiful thing. Now, as you kind of alluded to, though, it often gets necessitated more on the crisis side for people. So we're often dealing with, yes, the heavy side of people's lives, and, you know, some of the commonalities among people I've already mentioned. But, you know, to add to that list, you know, anxiety is always something that goes through the roof at times, and not just your everyday, you know, run-of-the-mill anxiety, but the crippling, paralyzing kind of anxiety that's really interrupting somebody's ability to perform, or standing in the middle of their marriage, or things like that. You know, a lot of moral failures we do deal with, whether that be infidelity or pornography, or you know, a deep you know, sin issue of some other kind that's caused a big blow up. And we deal with a lot of you know, leadership wounds, church hurts, and you know, surprising endings and those kinds of things. So those are all areas that we, you know, end up walking with people in life through. And it's just always a fun experience. And I say that word pretty loosely here, of course, but it's a fun experience when we just get to see God at work, though. And we get to see him show up in powerful ways in people's most broken states, and see him put their hearts back together.
Mm-hmm. So earlier, I loved the phrasing of blending theology and psychology, and just seeing these things coexist. So one of the things I was really excited to talk to you about is the real emphasis of the white flag is drawing people into a posture of surrender, of realizing that we live at a pace and a volume, and we even have a spiritual posture that drowns out the voice of God, that hinders our ability to rest in him and abide in him. And so from a clinical, like almost medical standpoint, even just from a secular view, could you unpack a little bit about some of the psychological benefits, or what is at play even going on with us anatomically when we slow down and we get quiet? You talked about burnout and anxiety. Like, I know that so much of what we need is to almost stop the rat race of what it means to be human in 2021 and adopt a different posture. But for just from that medical expertise and having walked through difficulty with hundreds or thousands of people, just from a secular view, even medically, why are these practices so good? Why does God prescribe them the way he does in scripture? And even maybe for the non-believing listener right now, of maybe these things are good, not just because Jesus says so, but because they are good. And we know it's because Jesus says so. But what response or answer would you have to that tension that people are trying to navigate?
Yeah. Well, as you talked about there, a lot of us are living at such a fast pace, and we're just doing life from one thing to the next. And margin feels like a luxury to so many people. And so, you know, what that does to us is it just causes us to live in a constant state of arousal. And so our bodies are keyed up and they're amped up all the time, and they're not given their natural recovery cycles. And so, you know, when we're living in this constant state of arousal, there's all kinds of physiological implications of stress, as we know, you know, its impacts on just all of our basic functioning, from our blood pressure to, you know, our cholesterol and all the things that just get impacted by a constant state of stress. But it also leads us emotionally into places where we tend to end up way more irritable. We tend to end up a lot more anxious because we're just not able to recover the way that we need to recover. And that keyed up, amped up lifestyle just starts to feel so normal. And so why it's so important to get into these routines of having silence and solitude and rhythm and slowness in our life is that it teaches our bodies how to relax and how to come down out of their state of arousal and just rest and take a deep breath. And of course, there's all kinds of spiritual parallels happening at that point that we can talk about. But just from a physiological sense, you know, that's just what it allows us to do and have that recovery time that is so critical to our health.
Wow. I'd never heard someone talk about like the resetting or like training your body to realize that this is a cycle, because we live our lives as we get up to 60 miles an hour and just go, go, go the whole time. And it's almost like to view your body like an engine where eventually it will burn out. You need to come back down into the lower gears for a time to recover. So, you're going to say something?
Well, just to continue that thought a little bit, you know, I don't know if this has ever happened to you in your days once upon a time, maybe of running that race of 100 miles an hour life. But, you know, you go on a vacation and it takes you how many days before you start to really relax, right? It's not the first day. It's maybe not even the second day. It's the third day or the fourth day. And then how much time do you spend ramping back up, get yourself geared up and pumped up to step back into it? And so it's just it's an example here of that rhythm that our body needs, where we can't fix this just with, you know, 5 minutes here or there of peace and quiet. We really have to have sustained rhythms in our lives that allow not only for momentary silence or slowness, but also extended periods of silence and slowness. So, you know, you have to piece all that together when you think about the true benefits and the long-term benefits of living that lifestyle, is to have both the small and the big woven into your life.
So you're not saying it's inherently bad to live in to get to a place where you have to be revved up for a season. But what you're saying is that what God designed to be a season has become a paradigmatic norm where people don't know how to get out of it.
Yeah, that's right. Norm is the perfect word. We call that normal now instead of seeing it as a temporary sacrifice. And I think I would put it in that kind of language. If you're going to have to live that way, it ought to be for a temporary sacrifice with a purpose. Whoa. But we just call it normal.
Whoa. So what we view, honestly, even on the show when I talk about this, I make solitude sound like the sacrifice. But what you're saying, what you're saying is the sacrifice is actually striving at that level just for a season, and then you come back to what should be your normal, which is like you know, the yoke that is easy and the burden that is light. That's right. The normal Jesus promises.
Yeah.
But even as I talk, I tell people, "Oh, you know, you got to take a break from the crazy," as if like it's a sacrifice to get still. But what you're advocating for is actually to flip that language and say, operating at 70, 80 hours a week, go, 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 checking your phone all the time, that's actually a sacrifice because it's killing you.
That's right. Well said, Jonathan.
I'm just taking what you said and just adding some words to it. That's
all. Well, you got it. That's it.
Wow. So when you meet with people and they're navigating a lie that's been exposed, or burnout, or just operating at this pace for so long, obviously there are clinical training that you bring to the table, but I know from your ministry that you were talking about, there is a deeply spiritual aspect. So how significant is it in your practice to help people learn how to get into these practices of surrender as part of their healing process? You know, how formative is it? How necessary is it? Is it necessary for everybody? Is it just sometimes helpful for some people? How formative are these things as you're trying to help someone heal or reset their identity? You know, how significant is it in your practice?
Yeah, I would go as far as to call it essential and universal.
Wow.
That's because, you know, I know that what I can offer someone is perspective. I can offer somebody truth. I can offer somebody a tool or a strategy. I can offer them insight. But what they have to do with God is the actual healing. And so, you know, if all they would do is come and sit with me for a few hours, I'm sure it might be nice and we could have some good conversations and they could feel enlightened and enthusiastic and hopeful about where they could go from there. But if that's the end of it, then it's definitely going to stop a step short, because there has to be an opportunity here for God to take what they have learned and make that real. What I mean is, there's in so many cases this barrier between our heads and our hearts, meaning we can understand things, we can have the knowledge of things, the information that can feel so exciting and powerful, but until we get that information moved down to our hearts where it becomes experience, it's just information, and it has to become experience in order to actually heal us, in order for it to become a new way of living, in order for it to reorient our experience in this world, maybe from one of anxiety to peacefulness, or one of anger into softness, or one of giving into temptations into self-control. And so, again, I call it essential to have these moments of surrender, these moments of solitude with God, where He can actually be the one who convinces you of a new identity, or He can be the one who shows you that, you know, when everybody has said to you your entire life, you know, God loves you and you're enough, He can convince you that that's actually true when you're in His presence. And so, again, we can talk at any point you want to about what that really looks like with God, but that's kind of the heart of it, that it's essential.
So I want to hear about how you instruct someone to step into this. But before I do, I just want to make sure everyone listening understands. Dr. Charity is a professional therapist who works with people going through deep hurt. But even she is saying, outside of resting with God and coming face to face with Him, she cannot manufacture transformation in people's lives. Like it has to come from abiding and resting and coming to a place where you look at the Father and receive the truth about you. She can do as much as she can, but without that, she's never going to really see a heart transformed. So with that being said, what do you do to help someone step into this completely alien practice in our modern world, especially someone who's coming to you with burnout, or their ministry is blown up, or their marriage is blown up? What advice do you give them? As many people on this show are listening, they've never tried this before until the show. What advice do you give practically, philosophically, that could help them step into this and feel like it'll never feel productive at first, but how do you make it productive? What advice do you give them?
Well, I think the first piece of advice would just be to keep it very simple, with very little expectation put to it. So if we step into this for the first time, you know, trying to master some beautiful, you know, spiritual discipline we read about online, you know, that's super complicated with 12 steps and only, you know, trained monks can do it, you know, we're setting ourselves up for failure. So simplicity is key. You're right. That's really all it takes, to be quite honest with you. That's not stepping a stop short. That's really all it takes. But so that just means it can be just as simple as sitting in the presence of God. You do not have to have an agenda. You don't have to pray a certain prayer. You don't have to keep your mind free of every distraction that it could possibly have. You just need to be in the presence of Jesus. So that's just the first piece of advice, is just keep it simple as you're learning how to do this. And then I think the second piece of advice is you're going to have to be ready to really manage your heart and mind in those moments. I think a lot of us might come into this kind of practice thinking that, you know, man, if I just try this a few times and I kind of get used to it, well, then my mind and my heart will cooperate with me. They'll stay quiet. They won't interrupt me. And I'll just kind of figure out how to, you know, be in these moments of silence with God without interruption. But I actually think we have to do a lot of management of our own hearts and minds, because they're full of noise. They're full of competition. And so, you know, that can mean a couple of different things to manage them. One can just mean you kind of have to do some preparation before you're going to step into a space of silence and solitude. You're going to have to kind of clear the whiteboard, if you will, erase all the contents and make space here for God. And so, you know, if you take a look at the mind, most of us would say our mind's going 100 miles all the time, thinking about the next to do, how we're going to solve that problem, who needs our help. And so I think we need to clear our minds, not just by saying, oh, I'll take care of that later, but do something more meaningful with that information so that it can really leave your heart or leave your mind. So one thing to do with that from a spiritual perspective is entrust things that want to take your attention in those moments. So that means, let's say, you know, for me, I've just really got somebody on my heart that I'm working with, and man, their life is blowing up, and I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to help them, but yet it's a time where I need to be in the presence of God. How I need to prepare my heart is to take that person that I'm concerned about, that I'm carrying weight for, and turn them over into God's hands for a moment, so that he can manage their story, their pain, their needs when I can't. And so that can just be a simple prayer where I just, you know, call that person to mind. I actually like to use imagery in this where I picture God before me, just stretching his arms out, waiting to receive, and just watch the exchange from my hands to his. And then just let my heart relax in that moment, recognizing I don't need to worry about that right now. God's got it.
Wow.
So that's just one of those preparatory examples of what I might do to actually clear the whiteboard and, you know, get my heart and my head into a space where I can actually be with God without my head and heart competing with me for that attention.
So you don't just punt the thought that comes in. You invite God to almost hold on to it while you're inviting him to even take that which you feel scattered by.
Yes.
So that you can then be more present with him.
Yes, well said. Just punting the thought works for about 30 seconds, and then there it comes
so
right back in. So,
so you have
to do something with that thought that's meaningful. You have to answer that thought with something that can actually not just, you know, punt it or get it out of attention, but can heal it or hold it for you. So that's what entrustment is all about.
So one of the earlier episodes we did was trying to help people realize that when you step into silence and solitude, negative emotions are going to come up. You know, we shouldn't expect to have this peaceful experience right off the bat, because when Jesus went to the desert, he found the devil. So we shouldn't be surprised when we find negative things within ourselves. But for some people, navigating these new ancient practices, the feedback I've gotten is that it's really hard. You know, it stirs up restlessness within themselves, insecurity, you know, or wounding from the past. What advice do you have for people who constantly are feeling like their time with God is actually going down and negative? Is it just writing down these things and picturing the Father reaching out to you? Maybe that's as simple as it is, but that came to mind while you were talking.
That's so good. I think it would build on that idea just a little bit and say, you know, of course, this is not an abnormal experience to have so much come up for you when you really slow down. You start to pay attention to yourself. You know, you tune in to the contents of your head and your heart when you're quiet. And so that's not abnormal, but we do need to be able to respond. And I think there's an invitation in these moments to a deeper healing process with God. So certainly there can be a momentary management of whatever's coming up for you. And that might be as simple as entrusting that thing to him for the moment. But I don't want to miss the deeper invitation that's there to a healing process. So I would encourage in that moment, first of all, just to pay attention to what's coming up. So notice it. Don't just say, okay, you can't think about that right now. You got other stuff to do, or that's not appropriate, or trying to be with the Lord. Find a space in there to actually pay attention and say, what is that? What is that telling me? What are you showing me, God? And you want to look for some key things. I think, first of all, it's just being able to name the emotion. What is that? Is that a fear? Is that shame? Is that anger? What is that that's rising up with you? And see if you can put a word to it, because that's showing you what I would call your sore spot. It's the place of your heart that is needing God's attention. And then if you can continue the journey of curiosity, there's a couple of other places that you can take that. So you can then ask yourself this question, where does that come from in my life? You know, there are so many things that have shaped our hearts. They have molded our hearts. They've created these sore spots. And so we want to get curious to begin to connect some dots and say, where does this come from? Because that's going to be important information on a healing journey with God, to be able to step into those places, understand those places, discover what they've taught you. And you also then want to begin to understand here, so if I can name that emotion, what does that produce in me? You know, sometimes it produces a strategy that we want to live by. Like if it's an anger, let's say, that's coming up in you that you're noticing, and you ask yourself this question, what does this compel me to do? You might begin to notice, man, this makes me want to put up walls with people around me. Or, you know, this just makes me never want to trust anybody again. And so you can begin to connect some dots in that way to really understand your heart more fully. So there's a lot more we could say about that, but to try to keep it simple for the moment, the point is curiosity, to begin to ask yourself some strategic questions that reveal the places in your heart that God needs to heal. And so what you do with that then is most likely you're going to need some help. So I would encourage everybody to reach out to a counselor or at least a really good friend and have some conversations, because you don't want to do this all on your own, and have somebody help guide you into how God can meet you in those moments with that awareness. And once you have gone on that journey of really doing some deeper healing work, let's come back to your original scenario where something's popping up for you that you don't want to be there and wanting to know what to do with it. If you've already done some of that healing work, then hopefully God has had something to show you or teach you that you can hold on to. And so if, let me stick with the example here of having worked through some anger that had popped up and you've done some work with God around that, maybe what God has taught you is how to see that person through his eyes and to see them perhaps as a broken being who's just acting out of their own pain. And so when you now try to enter into moments of silence or solitude, you might still feel those distractions once in a while pop up for you, or it catches you off guard. You haven't thought about that person in a while, but all of a sudden, here it is today. Now you have a new strategy in those moments, and that is just simply this: remember. Remember what God has taught you. Remember what God has shown you. Rehearse that truth. Remember the healing, and just calm your heart, reset your heart back to that place of peace or grace or security or whatever it is that he has brought you to. So that can become kind of a full circle moment where you walk through some hard healing and then you just reset your heart and remember when you need to, so that you're managing your heart at different levels of your healing journey with God. Does that make sense?
It does, totally. And just to kind of like take those big headlines you said for the listener, first, acknowledge what the emotion is. Like, just don't just let it be this monkey in the brain rattling the cage. You know, what is that you feel? Is it fear? Is it sadness? Is it anger? Is it anxiety, excitement? Then, you know, identify maybe what is stirring this up. And then the third level is, what is the behavior that's coming because of this? Like mm-hmm. Dr. Charity was saying, maybe you block yourself off or you lash out at other people. But just even those first three things, a significant portion of my time with the Lord in the morning is what I do, emotional check-ins, where I just audit. Sometimes I wake up really anxious and I don't know why. And then I realize, mm-hmm. oh, I'm anxious about this thing coming up. And had I not done that, one, I miss out on the fellowship of the Father coming alongside me. But two, I'm actually more prepared to step into that thing that scares me because I've called it out and I've realized it. And I think half the battle is just being able to do that. The resolution is going to come by the Spirit. It's going to come from professional help and friends. But so rarely do we even seek help because we just think we're curing this, oh, I'm just stressed. And oftentimes my opinion is the times that I'm very stressed are the times I'm actually feeling very deeply and I haven't called out what it is that I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good.
So coming out of 2020, it was a very difficult year for a lot of reasons for a lot of people. And in my time with God over the last couple weeks, I have caught myself longing for the intimacy with God that comes from desperation, but I'm no longer desperate. I don't feel desperate like I was. So from a professional standpoint, Dr. Charity, what is it about desperation that almost gets us to the point to finally be who God made us to be before him.
That's a beautiful perspective. I really love that. You know, desperation drives us to dependency, right?
Wow.
Where we let go of our own ability to understand it or fix it or control it. And so we finally get to that place of dependency where we say, God, I can't, so you can. Or God, I don't know how, so you show me how. And we live in that place of true partnership with God in those moments of desperation because it's driven us to dependency.
Wow, brilliant. I was just a thought that came to my head, and you're right. I finally am in a posture where I'm going to lean on him instead of leaning on myself.
Yeah, so we've gotten ourselves out of the way, and that feels so good because the pressure's off, right? We don't have to have the answer. We don't have to have the solution. We just get to lean into the comfort of God and lean into the presence of his Spirit. And we've given ourselves permission to in those places of desperation because we've really come to realize, again, we can't. Mm-hmm. We don't know how. And so it's a beautiful place to be in, truly, when you're actually dependent upon the Lord. And, you know, the danger is that we all get back into our routines where we lost the desperation. And if we let that mean that we've also lost dependency, we get in trouble.
Yeah, and that kind of flies antithetically in the face of our American mindset, right? That in order to be strong, I can't depend on anybody. And, you know, coming out of my own growth and your professional wisdom, walking through this with thousands of people, it's like, no, real strength actually comes when you realize you can't do it by yourself. And you can lean on the one who created the heavens and the earth and died for you and created you. And is just so antithetical, though, to the way we do things. That's why surrender is such an important posture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Charity, for you, you constantly have to pour out yourself to help other people get healthy spiritually. And in ministry, you know, the old leadership adage is, or the old saying in leadership is, you know, an empty vessel has nothing to offer. So you have to make sure that you're taking care of yourself first. Mm-hmm. And so the judgment I make about you is that it could be very easy for you to actually burn out yourself as you're helping other people recover from burnout because your empathy, I'm sure you're an empathetic person and you're carrying their hurt and their wounds, and yet there still has to be some sort of shield or some sort of protective barrier that, or some rhythm that makes sure you are healthy so you aren't getting unhealthy while helping other people recover. So what are some disciplines that you have to adopt or you have learned to adopt over the years of your profession to be a healthy vessel so that when you do pour out, you have something to offer?
Yeah, that's the, you know, very great perspective and so true. I think for so many people who are leading or helping or just giving of themselves in so many ways that we do have to make sure we stay on guard to care for our hearts. One of the perspectives that I always hold is in the Message version of the Bible in Matthew 10 verse 9. There's a phrase there that Jesus used to describe the disciples, and he just simply calls them the equipment. And I've always noticed that word. What a strategic word that he used to describe the disciples. You're the equipment. So I think just one general perspective that I hold that is a protective perspective is seeing myself as the equipment of Christ, just as he described the disciples as.
Wow.
And so with that, there comes a charge. To, you know, stay in those rhythms, to guard my own heart, because I know that if I don't, then I've sacrificed the equipment, right? So that's just a protective perspective that I hold. But when it comes to just rhythms and disciplines in life, I think, you know, one general thing is just having to stay in good rhythm with work and with family, and just with life. And, you know, my dad always says, there's no such thing as balance. There's only rhythm.
Yep.
And so, you know, we're going to make ourselves crazy trying to balance things all the time. We actually just have to live in rhythm where we have ebbs and flows. We have gives and takes, but we always maintain this important rhythm of ingredients in our life that bring us wellness and fill us up. And so another phrase that I just always hold on to is breathe life back into the equipment. And so for me, I think that means, you know, a few things. One, we talked just a few minutes ago about this concept of entrusting, and that is a very, very valuable discipline in my own life, especially in the work that I do, where I carry heavy stories and deal with very difficult moments of life with people. And, you know, my natural tendency would be to want to hold responsibility for that, to want to, you know, carry that as my own failure or my own success. And of course, we all know how incredibly dangerous that is.
Yeah.
And so entrusting is a posture and a discipline that I have to adopt over and over, to just turn people's stories over to God, let him hold it with me as they walk away at the end of a week. And, you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen next, just to be able to let them go with that trust that God's walking their next step with them, and that I can do my part, but he'll do his part too. So that is a very important discipline in my life that guards me from over responsibility and over functioning in that way. It guards me from anxiety. It guards me from insecurity. So, you know, that's one thing. I think another thing that's incredibly important is to rehearse something I call the big T truths.
Okay.
Now, big T truth just simply means the truth of God, the things that God would affirm, the perspective that he would hold if he might look at something and say, here's what I see. There is something that opposes big T truth in our lives, which is called little T truth. Now, little T truth is our own experiential truth, what seems true to us because of what we've lived or experienced or what somebody else has told us. And so oftentimes our little T truth or our experiential truth are in opposition to God's perspective. And that's what, when we get in trouble. And so, you know, there's always contents of our hearts that are fueling little T truths that, you know, are unique to us and the story that's been in our life. And so I think I mentioned the idea of a sore spot in our conversation a minute ago. It's just the places of pain that we hold, the things that have been shaped in our unique life story. And our little T truths are going to come right out of that place. Okay, so for me, in my life story, there were several heart shapers that took place that implanted some insecurity in me. So this is a part of my heart that has historically existed, and it produces little T-truths. So here's how this works, practically speaking. I have interactions with people, and I am interpreting and receiving all the incoming information, and a lot of it's being filtered by my sore spot. So I am hearing things through this filter of insecurity, and it's leaving me vulnerable to conclusions like, I'm not doing a good job, they don't like me, I'm not working hard enough, this isn't good enough. It leaves me vulnerable to all of those things. And so little T truths are the sentences I just said, all these things that I would say that match my experience, but they do not match God's perspective. So where I'm going with all of this is to say, an important discipline in my life is to guard my heart from its little T truths by speaking big T truth over it intentionally and strategically every single day. And so in my journey with God, he has given me a couple of strategic big T truths that I just hold on to. And they become phrases that I hear over and over, especially in the moments where I get insecure or in my work, I'm feeling overwhelmed by, you know, somebody's trauma or crisis. And I just need to repeat and rehearse these big T truths to help my heart be okay in those moments and not get sucked up into the trap of getting insecure and overwhelmed. So these big T truths that I have, I'll just share one. And it's just a very simple phrase, but it's this: Charity, you're bold. It's just a phrase that has come out of one of my times of solitude and silence with God. It's very personal to me and just represents the heart of who he says I am. And so whenever I start getting into those spaces which are going to take me into a place of either anxiety or burnout or pressure that I shouldn't be feeling, oftentimes it's because my insecurity has been triggered. And I just need to take a moment and say, God, let me remember that big T truth that you have shown me. Let me guard my heart and protect my heart by just getting quiet with you and letting myself hear those words from you again that have so much power to reset my heart back into the security that they need. Does that all make sense, Jonathan?
Oh, it's great. I mean, even the big T, little T language is very easy for me, and I'm sure for people listening, to grab onto and just to realize, like, oh, you know, when thinking about the therapy I've had to go through, and, you know, we encourage at our church these experiential weekends called Crucible and Liminal, and they're very all-encompassing spiritual and emotional retreats that force you to deal with some of these. I wouldn't use that language, but it's what it does. It forces you to deal with some stuff. And for me, you know, my little T was, I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy of love until I perform and get accepted through all the means that I can manipulate what you think about me, and coming to grips with what God says, that I am worthy and enough. I'm his son. I'm his child, whom he is well pleased with, just through my faith alone in Christ. It's like if I did a better job of speaking that over myself, not a daily declaration in the universe or in me, but in what God says.
Yes.
That sets me free to then not care what people think. You know?
That's right.
Even realizing that most of what people say to you is actually a reflection of themselves, has nothing to do with you.
That's right.
You know, I had to realize over the years, when I come down from preaching and someone comments on my outfit, that doesn't mean anything about me. It actually tells me a lot about them and how they're receiving
great
the morning.
Point. That's a great point.
But the T's, the big T, little T's, are very helpful language that can help us latch on to things. And so I guess one of my questions I wanted to ask here was, what's the first hour of your morning look like? And you've kind of let us in a little bit about those statements like I am bold, those big T, little T's, but I love asking every guest, what's the first hour or 90 minutes of their day look like, in hopes that someone could replicate some of the things that work for you because it might work for them in terms of connecting with God, obviously, and just starting off their day on the right foot.
Yeah. Well, I guess the first thing that I have to admit is that some days my first thing I see is my three-year-old's face, you know, coming in and waking me up. And there are just some mornings that start that way. But, you know, on the more ideal mornings.
Yes, perfect mornings, ideal morning. Yeah.
Yes. You know, one of the things that I like to stay in habit of is just, I usually read the Bible app on my phone. So grab my phone first thing before I even get out of bed and just at least look at the verse of the day.
Okay.
Just do something to let God's word be the very first thing that I touch, the very first thing that I see before I even roll out of bed and get going. And so I think there's just something centering about that, that it sets perspective already. Because I know my tendency is that if I don't do that, the first thing that will come to my mind is, what do I have to get done? And I will get into go mode right away. So it's guarding that just by saying, the first thing I need to pay attention to is, first of all, just God, that you're here. And then let me set my perspective in, what do you want for me today? What do you want to show me today? Not what do I have to get done or set my own agenda. So
do you have the Bible app on like the front page, so you don't have to have the discipline to not hit social media or something? Like, because some people might love that idea, but if it's like on the fourth page of their phone, that doesn't help them. Is there anything you do to set yourself up for success there, instead of falling down the rabbit hole of the iPhone or smartphone?
That's a very great observation. Yes, it's on the front page of my phone, so there's that. And I'm also just not a big person who's tempted by social media. So, you know, that's not super hard. So for anybody who is, I would just say avoid the whole thing. Just use your hardcover Bible, keep it by your bed, and let that be the first thing you touch. Or if it works better for you, I know one of my other mentors in life has just said the first thing he does is just hit the floor next to his bed before he even lets it stand up and get out of bed. Get on your knees. Just literally, your knees are the first thing that touches the floor.
That's great.
And just, it doesn't have to be long, but, you know, a 60-second prayer. So some mornings I do that as well. So it's just that first touch moment that's super important. And then the other thing that I really like to do is to just go out to my back patio. And I like to look up.
That's great.
Because there's something about just that morning sky that just represents God to me. You know, I usually am up early, so it's like the first light kind of idea. And you just look up and you know, the sun rays are just coming up there and the clouds are beautiful and it's just quiet and you'll hear a bird or two. And it's just a moment for me that centers me in God. So this is not about, you know, a scripture study. This is not a long prayer I'm praying. This is just a moment of acknowledging God's presence. And I really appreciate that moment of stillness, because it truly sets the pace for my day. Again, once again, I know myself. If I skip that and I'm just off to making coffee and, you know, whatever comes next, I'm in go mode and I'm in do mode. And so when I take that step outside and I just look up at the sky it's a moment of be. And so it sets the pace, wow. It sets the context. And I think these are just the important nuggets of it's a context setter. So sometimes in my day, this can't be a prolonged experience because either my three-year-old's going to be up or you got to get to the office early or whatever. But even in those kind of mornings, a set the context moment can go a really long way in the rest of your day.
So appreciate you sharing that with us. She lives in Florida, so the mornings in Florida, I'm sure, are a little bit more enjoyable than some other parts of the country.
Fair enough. We get year-round access.
Yeah, but please, everyone who listens, know this is the third, at least one of the first 3 to 4 interviews we've done, and she is doing what every other person I've talked to has done, which is their first time is not about content-laden Christian material. It is resting, and I love the word she used, being. Oh, my camera went off. That's fine. Resting and being with the Father. There's something incredible about just wanting to rest with Him. And yeah, there's Bible reading and stuff like that on the back end, but there are education systems and structures and the way in which we've been trained to be adults in America. We don't know who we are if we're not doing something. And God asks us to do nothing. And yes. So if that's like your big step takeaway of, okay, to be like Dr. Charity, I'm going to go outside and do nothing for a couple of minutes. That is a great thing to do.
Yes, I love it.
So I know there's going to be some people listening who are like, man, I want to hear more of her. I want to listen to her more. I want to learn from her more. You have a book and really a curriculum for people called Unhindered, Aligning the Story of Your Heart. It sounds like it's connecting that gap you're talking about from the mind to the heart. But tell us a little bit about that book and what your hope is for it and who is it really for?
Well, it is a book that creates a pathway for you to create those connections between the head and the heart. So to really be able to give God access to the deepest parts of who you are and align them with His intentions for your heart. So that means the identity that you hold, the way you see people, the way you see Him, the way you look at life, you know, all those very fundamental parts of us get aligned with Him and the things that He would say are true or have for us. So it helps us really understand, first of all, our own life story. These are the things we call our heart shapers that have shaped our hearts in ways that God wouldn't have intended or wouldn't recognize, and begin to just acknowledge some of those pieces and the contribution that they've made to our hearts in negative ways. So we've, of course, talked about sore spots today a little bit, and the idea of this is what gets created in our hearts. And Proverbs 4:23 is such a powerful verse. It just says, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. And so we begin then to just understand what flows out of our hearts. And we look at how that impacts the things that we think, the things we feel, the things we do, and how that ultimately creates the outcomes in our life. And so it really is this whole pathway that we can follow to first learn about the story that's been created in our hearts, and then how to let God have access to that, to rewrite the story the way that He would have intended. So this book is for anybody and for everybody who just wants to just become a little bit more like Jesus. So for those who are in crisis and they have, yeah, absolutely. You know, people who are in crisis or they're going through a hard thing, that book is definitely for you to figure out how to get that thing out of your way. But even for those who are comfortable in life or content in life, still have a next step to take where there's probably something more hindering you than you even realize. Something that's just standing in the way a little bit of, you know, impacting how you love or how you serve or, you know, just any number of things. So anyway, that's kind of the heart of what it is and what we want to equip people to do through reading it.
Great. So for anyone listening or watching on YouTube, the link to that book will be in the episode details and all that stuff. So you guys can look that up if you'd like. Last question, Dr. Charity, and this is one that I'm actually two questions. One,
okay.
Do you ever cry in your sessions or is that not allowed? Like I imagine you care so deeply for these people, but and you're dealing with really hard things, but you also want to have like your shield up. Like, is that a no-no in therapy or is that an inevitability sometimes? I was just curious.
Well, I'm sure it depends on what professional you ask in terms of whether that's a no-no. In my world, it's not a complete no-no because I see, you know, spending 5 days with people as doing life with them. And so we're in it together. Yeah. And I just can't help it. I care about these people because we're just in it together. And so I definitely am guilty of crying a time or two in sessions. And, you know, I try to control myself and not let it become about me. But sometimes that compassion just overwhelms you. And and I think there's a beauty to that, where even in a professional setting, we can do life together just a little bit, and that we can just let our authentic hearts show up together. And I hope that, what that creates is just freedom for other people to do the same with me.
Yeah, so good. I was just always curious of that when I talk to someone who's doing what you do. I was like, I wonder if they're allowed to. Okay, last question. So 2020 was a big year where there are several prominent Christian names who, for one reason or another, just had a complete deconstruction or blow up, or had things that they were doing get exposed. And the lie of our culture is to think, well, oh, that only happens to ministers. But the truth is, you know, in your profession, you're seeing everyday people, not just pastors, who are living unsustainably for their soul, and it produces unwanted behavior. So with the heartbreak I know you have for our culture and for the brokenness in the world, what warning signs would you offer, or what last word would you say to an audience who wants to learn from you on what are the things they need to be on the alert for in their own life to make sure, what are some guardrails even to make sure that they don't fall off that cliff? Because nobody ever intends to. But I have a dear friend whose baby sister will never go to church with him again, because the one church he ever got her to go to, that pastor had a bunch of stuff blow up last year. And so are there things or warnings or even cautions or whatever that you would give to an audience to say, hey, be on alert. You know, this is not just the top 1%. It happens to, it can happen to all of us. And maybe I'm just projecting on you that that's true, but I've been feeling that, and I'd love to hear what you'd have to say on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a very fair statement that it can happen to any of us. Now, we know that some of these high-level leaders that you're referring to have some commonalities in terms of how they got there, and there's some things we can say about that just in terms of maybe, you know, such a performance orientation in life, or a pace that's unsustainable, or just the pressures of leadership, and all those things are true. But I think what's universal is that we all have more hindrances in our hearts than we realize. And when we're under pressure, whether that be in leadership or raising five kids or whatever you've got, it's within those moments that our hindrances can get exposed even more. And so sometimes we just don't really realize how vulnerable we are to them, or that they're even present, until we get to that space where they blow up. So I think one of the most important things that we can do is just be curious about our hearts. It does not take a crisis for you to need to ask these questions of what's within me. Where are my vulnerabilities? What has been shaped in my heart that doesn't look like God? And so, you know, even in my story, again, just sharing that I've historically had some insecurity in there. Well, that wasn't a crisis moment. But if I don't pay attention to that over time, things can snowball and things can turn under the wrong circumstances and the perfect storm. Even things like that can blow up around you, because, you know, how can something like insecurity do that? Well, I mean, if I just take an example of, and I'm not speaking of anyone specific here, but just like a high-level leader here, with insecurity in their heart, they're going to start to make really stupid decisions when pressure gets put on. Like, how am I going to look good? Or how am I going to manage people's opinions or preferences here instead of doing the right thing? And then you find yourself making bad decisions and having consequences of that, and things just compile. So, you know, I don't need to follow that any further for the moment, but just recognize that one thing you can do is be curious about your heart now and deal with things when they're just things, when they're just hindrances rather than life blow-ups. So I think that's a very important principle of living that we just all need to abide by here. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does. And the word curious you've used a couple times. Yeah. My wife has brought it up in some of her work that she's done, soul work and going to counseling. And I think I want that phrase to be sort of like the stamp of this episode of learning how to get curious, seeing solitude and rest and stillness with God as an act of curiosity, to explore the goodness of God, to explore the big T truths that he says about you, and to explore that which is hindering you from experiencing the goodness that he promises. Mm-hmm. Because the first interview we ever had on the show, it was either Jesus isn't who he says he is, or I'm doing something wrong. And obviously Jesus does not fail. So there's something wrong in about the way we approach him, the way we're trying to rest in him. So this phrase, be curious, I want that to be the stamp on this time with Dr. Charity. That's so good. Dr. Charity, thank you so much. Really, really great to have you here. I know you do a lot of great work. I'll link to your ministry as well as the book into the episode notes and all that stuff. And for all of you, you know, she's going to be a great resource that I'm probably going to want to have back on the show because it was so helpful.
Thank you. So good. Well, yeah, I appreciate it. Great to be with you.